Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Top of the morning. Good Thursday to you. Thanks, as always, to Pete Medhurst, our pal, just across the hall in our update booth. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan on a day that was supposed to have been opening day for the Nationals. They'll kick off a brand new season in Cincinnati tomorrow because it is raining in Ohio right now.
Stupid rain.
It is opening day in Major League Baseball, which is exciting. Danny, happy baseball season, my friend.
Happy baseball season. You and I are baseball guys. You know that. I know that. Henry Washington knows that. He's out there bucking for a promotion. We all want baseball. We all love it. Now, some people don't. They don't understand why we do. Here's the basic gist. It's there for you. That's my summation. That's my elevator pitch. It's there for you. It starts today, and it will always be there. You've got months where you can check in, you can check out, you can take 2 weeks vacation, you can read an article, you can watch every pitch, you can keep a scorebook. You can do it however you want to do it. Other sports don't leave you as many options. Baseball, just there for you. All they want to do is play right down the street every night, every afternoon, every evening. They'll be right there like a nice warm blanket on a chilly evening. Let them into your home. Let Bob and FP describe what's going on. Let Charlie and Dave, if you're out and about in the car, describe what's going on in perfect detail. Enjoy a mid-90s win type program here that I thought was unfathomable when the rumor of baseball coming back to my hometown occurred a little over a decade ago. Amazing.
If I can quote ancient philosopher Daniel Rauer, to baseball today I say happy birthday, New Year.
Happy birthday, New Year.
It's a happy birthday, New Year for Major League Baseball, and we're excited about that. My favorite thing about opening day is just all the aces that are on the mound, all the number ones working. John Lester throwing for the Cubs to kick off the season at 12:40 at Marlins Park in Miami. You got Carlos Martinez and Noah Syndergaard, a couple of guys who can touch 100 in the Cardinals and the Mets game at Citi Field today at 1:10. Right up the road in Baltimore just after 3, the Orioles will inaugurate a new campaign. They're throwing Dylan Bundy for the first time on opening day, their former top 5 pick out of Owosso High School in Oklahoma.
So not quite an ace, but he's there. Number one.
Well, not every team gets one.
Not every team gets one. Now,
if your pitching staff is as bad as Baltimore's, you're going with a high upside, oft-injured, electrifying arm who probably is going to go 7 good innings on a good day.
That division is going to be murderous, just how good it is.
You think the Yankees with Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge both hitting 50 homers are a feared duo?
Yeah, and Boston is excellent, but they're like the second fiddle. I think Toronto's going to be okay, by the way. But anyway, the point
is fine.
The Orioles have an uphill climb. And they're going to have to win a lot of 10-9 ball games.
I'm all about the Astros, your defending champions, who have gone the analytics route to win a title. Justin Verlander pitches for them today. Elsewhere, Chris Sale gets the ball for Boston, 4 o'clock against Chris Archer in the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm going to bank on the fact that Chris Archer is traded before the end of this season. I do not think he finishes the year Tampa Bay. Love to see him in Washington. Hint, hint. Aaron Nola pitches for the Phillies, who I think are going to be a lot better than people think in the NL East. They're getting closer. Was texting with a buddy of mine who's in their front office yesterday. They feel really good about the roster they put together.
They should.
They're about a pitcher away from being in that high 80s win wild card mix.
With the wild card, by the way, I know we're getting into the weeds here on baseball teams. With the wild card, if they're hanging around Counting Crows style in July, June, July, they could start to add to some of these kids and give them a taste of competitive baseball in September.
Here is your best pitching pairing of the day. If this doesn't scream opening day, I don't know what does. Corey Kluber, who won his second Cy Young Award last season pitching for the Cleveland Indians, and Felix Hernandez, who, believe it or not, is only 31, making his 11th opening day start. Think about that.
That's crazy, dude.
That means he got to the big leagues at 20, and by the year after that was already pitching on opening day as a number one starter. And this is the 11th time that he's done that as a 31-year-old, which is just staggering. But I'm pumped. Before we move on from baseball, let me tell you about one thing I entered into last night, which I think is awesome. And I haven't told you about this yet.
Oh.
I've got a little Jason Bishop in me. See, I don't love the betting on games every night thing, on outcomes or over-unders and all that.
It gets to be too much. It becomes it what your life is.
What I love is engaging in fun that allows me to have a little bit more juice over the long haul of a season or just day-to-day fun. So like
fantasy sports.
Exactly. But I get into, whether it's daily fantasy for baseball, that's fun. I love this pool that Jason had a couple seasons ago where you had to pick a player to get a base hit every single night. I would do a lot of like research on the pitching matchups and all that. Here's the thing I found yesterday that I think is awesome. My buddy emailed me this. I'm in a pool where you have to pick six home run hitters who are going to hit the most home runs of anyone in this pool, and the six players can't have hit more than 130 homers last season. So you can't just go out and pick Giancarlo Stanton.
And Aaron Judge.
Exactly. These are 130 at your disposal to be used on six different guys. So there's a lot of strategy in it.
Okay.
The other thing is that you can swap out one home run hitter at any point this year for one of your guys and get their homers for the rest of the season. But the person you're swapping in has to have hit less homers as of that time and less homers as of last season than the guy you're swapping them for. So it's just awesome strategy. You really got to do a lot of thinking. And I'm excited about this. I've never done it before.
It sounds intriguing. It sounds very involved. I will also say I got confused midway through there, but I'm glad you're excited about it.
I think you would have fun with it. It's too late for you to join this year.
Right.
But if it goes as well as I think it's going to, I want you in next year.
Meaning you basically can't have anybody that's had any career success in terms of hitting homers if you want to win this thing. You got to find the guy that's going to break out.
So the goal is, yes, you're looking for guys who could break out, clearly. Like my sixth guy I grabbed was Ronald Acuna, the top Braves prospect who I think could hit 30 if he's up early enough this year. But I took Bryce Harper, who hit 29 last year because I'm banking on 11 or 12 more than that.
That's a good pick.
I took Chris Davis from the Orioles, who hit mid-20s last year, who's hit 50 in his career before.
These are good picks.
He could respond.
I see what you're saying.
But you've got to get some known commodity in there as well. So I took Nolan Arenado, hit 37, and is a lock for 38 or 40 for the Rockies. Your boy, I had to go grab some instant pop in Carlos Correa, only at 24 because he got hurt. That's the other thing. You're looking for guys who were hurt
right,
or out of the lineup.
Guys had down years.
But it's fun. Anything that involves that kind of strategy, it's individualized. Like for the tournament, I care way less about my bracket, way more about the individual player pools that I get into. Maybe it's as simple as I like the individual stuff.
I was going to say, you do. I think that
more than team.
There's your headline right there.
Exactly. The Caps headline last night was that Evgeny meant necessary. They needed a goal with 65 seconds left to force overtime against a bad Rangers team. They got it from Lars Eller, who was working his butt off in the crease, knocking a defender to the ice, and then ramming a puck past Henrik Lundqvist, who'd been fantastic. They stole a point and then had a chance to steal another one, and Kuznetsov ensured that that would happen.
Ryder ahead, and a pass off Zibanejad. Hit the linesman's skate. That's going to turn it around. Here comes Kuznetsov coming down the middle, and the Rangers get back. Kuznetsov going to hold on to get fresh attackers on. Ovechkin is one of the shots. He scores! It's over! Kuznetsov with a game winner! Good morning! Good afternoon! And good night, New York! The Capitals pull it out of the fire and win 3-2 over the Rangers!
Rhetorical question. You can answer it if you want to. Who would you rather have in the Eastern Conference in 3-on-3 overtime hockey on the ice with the puck than Evgeny Kuznetsov? Connor McDavid is a clear answer, but he's in another conference.
He's in the different conference.
What a magician that dude is. I'm yelling at him the whole time. Kuz, what are you doing? Kuz, what are you doing? Oh, Kuz, good shot.
Way to
win
the
game.
Really good. Smart.
Andrei Burakovsky, take him off a milk carton. Final minute of the first period. He scored his 10th goal of the year. I mentioned the Eller heroics late in the third. The Caps have won 5 in a row and 9 of 10 with the playoffs coming near.
I missed the game-tying goal late in the third period, changing a diaper. Give me the summary right there. It looked to me like that was a lost cause. The Rangers, I thought, were outskating the Caps late in that, or mostly through that third period, I thought.
First of all, the Caps got bailed out because there should have been a too many men on the ice penalty that wasn't called against them.
Okay.
So they have a chance, rather than being on the wrong end of a penalty kill situation to close the game, to pull their goalie and to go 6-on-5. So they had a man advantage based on the empty net, and Eller was parked in the crease, literally just cross-checked the defenseman to the ice, being bigger and stronger than one of the kids for the Rangers, got a decent pass from behind the net, and proceeded to tip it over top of the shoulder of Henrik Lundqvist. Great feed from Nicholas Backstrom. Kuznetsov got one of the assists on that as well.
Excellent.
But yeah, it was dramatic. It was fun. Anytime you've got a empty net, you've pulled your goalie, you tie the game with less than a minute 10 to go, the building goes bonkers and Capital One Arena exploded.
Tell me about the kid. I think this kid's a story.
He
the Gerstedt situation is a story.
Yes. So this is actually super fun. And I don't care if you like the Caps or not. I think you can relate to this and you can enjoy this. Shane Gersich, who wore 63 last night, uniform number, is 21 years old.
Okay.
He played at the University of North Dakota. This is the same college program that has churned out, I believe, now 11 NHL players. The best college program in the country over the last several years. They had a down year this year. But he was roommates with and best buddies with Brock Besser, who in Vancouver this year would have been the rookie of the year in the National Hockey League had he not have gotten injured. He scored basically 5 days after playing in college when he got called up last year and became an assassin offensively this season. This is a guy who's played with Team USA, who's done very well. He's an American kid at North Dakota up until 1 week ago playing college hockey. You following me?
Yeah.
Caps drafted him in 14. He is now in the NHL. This is the new hot noise. The Bruins have this kid. Donato, what's the Bruins player's name, Thommy, that scores every night who just was in the college like a week ago?
Ryan Donato,
okay?
Ryan Donato.
This is the new thing in the NHL.
I had econ with him.
You can play college hockey and a week later be in the National Hockey League. What other sport is that possible? Where do you see that? When does that happen? He was an amateur playing for the American club in the Olympics. Now he's scoring every single night for the Bruins.
Basically like four college pitchers over the last 50
exactly.
years have had that. Yeah.
It's just amazing. But you see Gersich last night out on the ice. What you get was speed, number one.
That's what I care about.
Quickness. He works his butt off. He reminds me basically of a younger TJ Oshie in a lot of ways, to be honest with you. Now his hands are going to have to come on like Oshie's. But remember when Oshie broke out with the Blues? He was essentially like skilled and fast and a worker, but he wasn't about to go score 30 goals at any point. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I want this dude playing in the playoffs. This is speed.
Here's what I know. Pittsburgh always has seven of these guys that you never heard of until March, and then they ruin everything in April and May. I want that.
It's funny you say that.
Find me seven of those guys.
The comp from a lot of the guys that I was watching with that are smarter than me, like Lachlan and Alan May and the dudes at NBC Sports Washington.
Hold it here.
Was like a Connor Sherry type from the Penguins mm-hmm. who mm-hmm. just torments the Caps and everyone else in the playoffs, or a Jake Guentzel. But yeah, there's a chance this dude could play in the postseason.
I want it. I fall in love. You know how I fall in love with
yeah.
fast hockey players? That's my new thing. Like, I fell in love with Jacob Vrana. I've now fallen in love with this Gersich kid. I've fallen in love. I'm in love.
I've never fallen in love with Roger Goodell.
No.
Most people haven't. The league he runs has changed some rules, and he thinks that the rules that are being changed are going to work out very well. The players who play for him, or I guess they don't play for him, but play in his league, disagree with him. Let you know what Roger Goodell said at the owners' meetings about rule changes to not being able to lower your helmet, no matter if you're carrying the ball or you're tackling someone who is. Next on Grant and Danny. There is a case to be made that the rule change that just came down in the NFL yesterday is the biggest story in sports this week, and I understand how many major things are going on. But with the number of people in this country that love football, this could change the game. It really could. Welcome back, Grant and Danny, on 106.7 The Fan. This is from a story written by Alex Marvez of the Sporting News. He says, this is not hyperbole. NFL football, as we know it, may never be the same, depending on what becomes of the lowering of the helmet ban approved Tuesday by team owners. The exact wording of the rule will be completed later in the offseason. But as explained by NFL Competition Committee Chairman Rich McKay, the league is shifting from some situational protection, shielding, defenseless pass catchers, long snappers, to covering, quote, all players at all times. Understand philosophically the difference here between situationally looking out for guys who are defenseless, and now everyone on the field, no matter where you are and what you're doing, cannot lower your helmet or be hit by someone lowering their helmet. 15-yard penalties are going to be assessed. Possible ejections for the most egregious of these helmet violations. If the league is very cautious without doles out ejections and very cautious without throws flags on some of these plays, then this will not be that big of a deal. But we do not know how they're going to officiate this just yet. Roger Goodell was at the podium at the owners' meetings yesterday, and he was taking questions from the media about how they're going to legislate this. He believes that the rule is not going to be as difficult to officiate and legislate in-game as you and I do. Here's what he had to say about that.
Our focus is how to take the head out of the game and make sure that we're using the helmet as protection and is not being used as a weapon. And that's the core of what we're focused on.
Goodell went on to say that the rule change predicated on getting helmet-to-helmet hits out of the game is one that is going to benefit everybody in the National Football League. Even the players right now that are, I would say,
miffed,
going against what every person at the highest level is saying is a good thing. Josh Norman came out yesterday. Other defensive backs, other players basically said, you're not letting us play football anymore.
Yeah, DJ Swearinger had a lot of capital letters in his explanation on Twitter. All the rhetoric up at the podium from Goodell and from other folks in the NFL is good. It's the right thing to do. But it's one of those things that happens where you have to look between that and the actual application of a rule. So when someone stands up and says, we're about public safety, public safety is the most important. And then they're sitting there counting their money
Exactly. Because
they're getting you over on something.
Well, the application of the rule is the in-game officiating, which he talked about.
We believe that this rule is actually going to be very easy for us to officiate and actually bring more clarity. So we look at that as a positive.
It's okay to say that. Notice how short that cut was. You didn't expound upon that very much.
Because he can't.
You didn't tell me how it's going to be easy to officiate. You could tell me, oh, don't worry, our guys are going to be able to officiate this. Are they? Because there's a lot of vagueness here. Running back lowers his head, plows through a DB, knocks him to the ground. Helmet goes to the shoulder pad of the defensive player. By the way of the rule, that is now a penalty.
Google
that
third and
running
one.
Back is going to get flagged for.
Find any video of a third and one in the NFL where a running play happens. Four defensive linemen, sometimes five if it's a jumbo-type package. Everybody lowers their head, dives down to the ground trying to get themselves low as possible to push back the pile. Offensive linemen getting low, engaging. Running back getting low and engaging. Every one of those times, the crown of the helmet or the helmet dips down. Even though the intent isn't to headbutt somebody, the intent isn't to Chuck Cecil somebody, the intent isn't to blow some player up, that's how the rule is now written.
This, but not is, only what, that, it's
this
just
is what
natural.
I want to stress. Yeah,
you're running with
it
the
is.
Football. Take something in your arms, let someone come at you as you go toward them, and you tell me you don't kind of turtle shell up a little bit.
Stand straight. I'll do you one simpler. Stand straight up. Have somebody walk by with one of those big, long yardstick rulers. Have them take a swing at your stomach. Bet you keel over.
Right.
Bet you crunch down. Your head drops. That's what's going to happen all the time. That is the sport. I understand what they're trying to do and why they're trying to do it, and I applaud it. I swear to God I do. It's important to me. It's a bigger deal. I know everybody likes to talk about the wussification. These are people's lives, and I know they signed up for this. I know they did. It's still awfully jarring. I know.
Yeah, make the game safer. But to me, A, this is impossible to officiate correctly. B, this is not a necessary change.
Eliminate
in
vagary.
That attempt to make the game safer. And if it is, then do a better job defining what is a penalty and what isn't, and whether or not guys are actually going to be ejected for this. Goodell's not opposed, by the way, to allowing teams to review plays, it doesn't sound like, where a helmet is lowered. Listen to this.
It is the first time that we've used replay for safety. And I think that's a positive thing. As Rich said, it's the first time we've used replay in respect to any kind of a foul. But we think that's warranted for safety-related issues.
Now, you better be able to go to the booth and look at something if you're going to kick a guy out of a game. I still see all the time at the college level where they have the targeting rules that I hate, they will look at these plays for 3 minutes on the sideline,
so much
watch
delay.
Them 22 times, and then they'll boot a guy from a game that doesn't deserve to be ejected.
Yep.
So I'm glad that they'll be able to get under the little tarp and watch the play again and review on one of these targeting calls. But what I'm curious about is just a penalized 15-yarder because a running back lowered his head and ran over a DB. Is he telling me that those are reviewable as well, Danny?
They clarified the catch rule as best they could. It's still vague, but it's not the open sea of vagueness that it was. It's now one thing will happen. It's not seven things. Well, the guy tripped over a power cord 16 feet away from the end line, so now we can figure out that he's none of this completing the catch going to the ground bullcrap. It's still going to be vague because did he have the ability to make a football move or not is going to be the thing that we're going to debate a million times over, and it's going to fill the Twitterverse up. Every step forward that they take, they're now adding more vagary. That should be the enemy here. Even if you have to live with a bad call, this isn't good for the league. This is bad.
Well, here's how they're going to try to fight that is Goodell says they're basically going to have every team and every player well up to speed on the new rules by the time the season starts. Good luck with that, because they're going to spend time with everyone. He's going to send league officials team by team to try to coach them up on the new rule.
Our intent is to make sure we go in, we go to each team, and we have tape, we have all of the analysis and work that was done in great coordination with our various teams to be able to communicate that to them. So I'd give them an opportunity first to understand what the play is before we make a lot of judgments about the ramifications.
I've sat several times in those meetings where the NFL referee comes in and talks to the media at training camp right after they met with the team. And then I've gone to players and coaches and said, hey, you're pretty clear on this new rule. And
you get
say,
all this, right?
not really. Well, I said, well, how are you going to make a change? What are you going to do differently? Not much. I guess we'll see as we go. There is always gray area, and the notion that you're just going to send someone, which you've been doing for years, by the way, to, quote, educate each team, that's not going to work. It's going to be a trial-by-fire basis, just like a lot of this stuff is.
Every one of these kids has been playing football since they were 3 and 4 and 5 years old. You get guys that played in the NFL, then talk about the game for a living, who are on color commentary going, I think that's a catch. The ball was juggled one time back in the 70s, so it's not a catch. Everyone's surprised at all times. You're going to tell me that everybody will intuitively get this rule? This, you're again, I keep saying the same thing over and over. You're adding new things that officials have to get together, sit around, and figure out, which A, is bad. The delays are awful. Nobody likes them. B, too much screen time for officials as it is. And then C, you added more open to interpretation vagary where it won't be consistently applied across all 32 teams each week. Glaring mistake.
The good, I guess, if there is some, is that the game is a little bit safer, presumably, if you're less likely to lower your head and ram into someone. But do you like this or not? Danny and I are clearly adamantly opposed to it. We think there are going to be more flags on football plays and potential ejections, which I would never have other than some outrageously dirty offense.
You got to go Avantes perfect for me to throw you out of a game.
Right. 800-636-1067 is the number. The phone lines are open right now. 800-636-1067. You want to respond to Roger Goodell at the podium yesterday. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny on The Fan. By the way, apparently we weren't the only ones who found it ironic and problematic that Bruce Allen talked about judging every person in the organization by their win-loss record. Dan Steinberg, who I was texting with about this, wrote a nice piece I was just reading in the Washington Post saying, Bruce Allen tells us we should judge quarterbacks, equipment managers, and team presidents by their one-loss records. Sure about that? Yeah, there was irony that was palpable in that statement.
Very much so. Alanis Morissette sang about it. Isn't it ironic that a GM with a terrible record or president with a terrible record wants to be judged by his record? I got an argument years ago on air, and it was all pleasant, but we disagreed with LeVar Arrington, if you remember this, of LeVar and Duke's fame. And LeVar pointed to Mike Shanahan's record his first couple years, and I said, well, if that's all we're doing, then no one needs us. No one needs sports radio. No one needs any analysis. No one needs television. You could just have one Google machine and look up somebody's record, and that's it. There's nuance. Mike Shanahan improved a lot of things in the operation, right? The fact that they had, like, an actual chef on staff that would cook nutritious meals. They improve training
Bruce
facilities.
Allen, so, by the
so
way.
Bruce has done a lot of good stuff. I'd like to judge you by that. Are you closer to winning than you've been before? Absolutely. Your early tenure, you were cleaning up a different mess, and I get all that. There's context. All I want is for you to view things at least as sophisticated as me, a fat rube sitting in a room. For the love of God, you're a professional. Please elevate the conversation.
Yeah, that's my aggravation, annoyance. This is why I bristle is I get annoyed when someone calls in who's just a fan like you and me and has an opinion on the team that doesn't matter, like mine and like yours doesn't matter. And they say, oh, well, Alex Smith won a bunch of games in Kansas City, so he's good. Well, no, he's good, but that has nothing to do with the record in Kansas City and everything to do with how he played in Kansas City. When my team executives are using that same logic.
How many big games has he won? How many? What's his record?
Oh, I want them to be different. It's like, you know, when people got very upset. Most recently, it was Barack Obama, but it doesn't matter what political affiliation it is. It could be blue, it could be red, whatever you want. But people say, well, he's a celebrity. You know, you could do it with Donald Trump. He's a celebrity. Well, I don't want my president of the United States to be just some dude I saw at the gym. You know, I want someone to be a little bit unique and special and different and a level above everybody else. That's what I would like. I don't want my team president to think like someone in Section 413. I want them to have more information and do a little bit better. The league's trying to do better with some new rules. We don't like them. We're asking for your opinion at 800-636-1067. And this is not hyperbolic. If legislated in a way where there are a bunch of flags and an ejection regularly in more games than not for lowering your helmet, this could absolutely change the way football is played. We're trying to figure out what you guys think of some of the clips from Roger Goodell we just played. Zach's in Virginia. What's up, Zach?
Hey, how y'all doing today?
What's up, buddy?
Doing well.
All right. Yeah, I mean, my only comment on it is that, you know, it just seems like, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do and they're trying to make it safer, you know, but like, you know, you got guys like a defensive end, you know, rushing around the edge, trying to make a sack on the quarterback. I mean, when he dies, he's going to be leading with his head.
Right.
The other thing I wanted to ask about, I was reading something yesterday on USA Today that they were talking about possibly doing away with the kickoff.
That's up for debate, and that's something we're going to talk about later on in the show. These owners' meetings, this is where stuff happens. This is what I always try to remind people. I don't say always, but it comes up every now and again.
No, you always do it.
I do overdo it.
Every day, every hour, and every minute.
No, you're right. I overdo it. This is what the league is. Everybody always thinks of football plays and great moments and players playing and touchdowns scored or whatever else. This is the league. Several people serving at the pleasure of 32 billionaires. It's their group. It's their thing. They decide. And every time we think somebody's got leverage or power, it's pittance. It's chicken feed next to what these 32 billionaires, how they go about their business and how they operate. This is where stuff gets done. It's where it gets decided. Getting 1,700 or so players on the same page to pull the rope in the same direction when it comes to union and the NFLPA, it's an uphill battle. Much easier to get 32 billionaires in the room to try to keep their billions. They're really good at that. They're really, really good at it.
Yeah, and to the caller's point, what he's saying is a member of the NFL's comp committee said that the league could be close to eliminating the kickoff. It was Packers president Mark Murphy telling reporters yesterday the kickoff could go away altogether if nothing is done to make it safer. His quote was that we've reduced the number of returns. Remember, they got rid of where you kick off from and changed the yard line so that there are way more touchbacks now and less than ever we see return men bringing the ball out of the back of the end zone. He says, but we haven't really done anything to make the play safer. The reason they do this is that the numbers suggest that the kickoff is the most dangerous play in football in terms of concussions and collisions and head injuries. All levels of football, according to SI.com, have struggled with how to deal with the inherently dangerous play. In 2011, the NFL moved the spot of the kickoff forward from the 30 to the 35. That's where the touchbacks came from. NCAA did the same thing in 2012, while also changing the spot on the ball on touchbacks from the 20 to the 25-yard line. The NFL moved the spot in 2016 now as well. So we've seen the last couple of years. You know what? There was a point in time where I said, do not get rid of the kickoff. That'll change the game. I still think it's a bad idea from a player's perspective because there are special teamers, guys who only play teams, and it takes away a lot of value, and they'll make less money, and less of those guys will be in the league. But the kickoff has become a completely uninteresting play. The kickoff has become a waste of everyone's time.
For most teams.
You line up, you boot the ball downfield, and I would say 75 to 85% of the time now, there's touchbacks. Nobody really strategizes. Sometimes you see this, but it's rare, where you pooch it and it's fielded at the three and you get the ball at the 19. I 5 years ago would have told you I'll never want to get rid of the kickoff. It's too exciting. You're not going to have a Brian Mitchell again who's got 10 or 12 career kickoff returns for touchdowns. No way. There aren't enough plays. There's two or three every year, maybe, max, out of hundreds of kickoffs?
So there are a couple teams, the Patriots actually do this, where they are not willing to concede the average start. They kick it as high as possible. They try to land it right at the goal line. And that's something that they do. They had one of the fewer touchback totals in the league, despite having a kicker that could do it. And so their average field position start for their opponents was in the low 20s instead of that 25, which everyone else just kind of concedes. For the most part, though, you're right. 30-plus teams, I feel like, do it that way.
Since Gostkowski had 40 touchbacks last year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I remember watching one of the playoff games, and that's one of the commentators said that.
The year before that, it was 52, and the year before that, it was 70. So maybe strategically, they did that a lot more often.
They may have. So it's not every time, obviously.
Right.
But for the most part, I think the point stands, is that they've taken the excitement out of the play and then now wonder why it's not exciting. You know what I mean? Like, you adjusted
though,
something.
When they changed the extra point distance, Roger Goodell moving the extra point back to the 33-yard line, or I guess back for a 33-yard extra point to the 23-yard line, his logic at that time was what? What did he tell us when they moved it back?
We want to make the play more exciting.
Yeah, he said every single play has to be exciting. We don't want you to be able to skip plays. You can't skip the kickoff right now. I promise you can. The kickoff is not exciting. Nothing's going to happen. It is a completely useless play almost 90% of the time. So I am more for getting rid of it because they've ruined it already in terms of its level of interest that should be garnered based on all the rule changes. They keep watering it down and watering it down and watering it down, and now it's just water. I don't need it.
Right.
It's not good anymore. John Wall might play tonight. If he does, the Wizards are going to be in good shape heading into the playoffs because he'll have enough time to get back into the flow with his teammates. He is questionable. We'll look ahead to this evening's matchup and see if he'll be on the floor next. Brant and Danny on The Fan. He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. We are both on Twitter. You should follow Danny.
At Funny Danny for me, at Grant H. Paulson. What that's going to do is put you in touch with Grant H. Paulson.
Let's go last five on Instagram, shall we? We like to do that from time to time.
Oh, I have been slacking. Let's go to that.
I don't have a lot in the chamber that's worth your time either.
I'm guessing it's going to be you on set at NBC Sports Washington getting ready to talk.
There's a lot of that.
Capitals.
No, there's only one of those in the last five, believe it or not. A Grant H. Paulson on Instagram. So here's what we're working with.
Go.
I got me hanging out with Craig Lachlan watching Capitals hockey last night. I got a barber chair at Floyd's 99 Barbershop where I get my haircut.
Where is that spot?
So the one I go to is on King Street in Alexandria.
Okay.
But there are a few. There's one in Merrifield, which is, am I saying that right? Merrifield?
Yeah.
It's, near
it sounds
the
weird off the tongue. You see it written and you go, yeah, Merrifield. And then you say it out loud. You go, am I
it's
doing this right?
It's also a place that I'm there enough. And when I'm there, I really enjoy it. No idea where it really is. I know that it's near the Beltway. Gallows Road might be involved somehow.
It's like inside, but also it's not Vienna.
I'm the guy that I hate who took a picture of traffic, but I was just dumbfounded at 12:30 in the morning sitting in bumper-to-bumper construction traffic parked for 30 minutes. Then I've got one of those pictures you talked about on set with Al Koken and the company. And I've got a picture of Jasmine the puppy. This is the Chihuahua that the wife's family owns that is very cute. It was laying in the sun and getting some rays, so I had to take a picture of that.
So I got to go. Again, not too active here lately, but picture of broadcast live at Navy before we went to spring training where you were throwing up on the side of Route 50.
That was a really fun time for me.
So old Pete Metters and I are doing that. The next picture is of my impromptu door safety measure in our terrible hotel of death in Florida.
Oh, that's right. When you propped the door closed with a chair?
Yeah, where I made it a little bit more difficult for a would-be murdering robber. The next picture after that is the giant hair that was eye level in the shower that you couldn't possibly miss. You had to purposely avoid it, and that's what happened.
Did you end up seeing any of the pictures of the hotel the junkie stayed in?
I sure did.
They had like an Olympic-sized swimming pool with palm trees like in the pool. I mean, it was one of the nicest hotels I've ever seen.
You know what I saw there? I saw safety and comfort.
Comfort.
It's the opposite of what we had.
I saw a lot of leisure, too.
Did you see some leisure in there?
There was a little bit of leisure, Dar. You're right about that.
I had, for mine, I had unsafe vomiting. That's kind of what my hotel reminded me of. The next thing I have is a piece of paper that says, this page intentionally left blank. Is it? That's kind of my question there, because it's not actually left
because
blank. There are words on the page.
It says this page intentionally left blank.
Yeah, but it's like you didn't. And then a picture of me before my show at the Cellar Door. Really fun show, by the way. Fun restaurant in Frederick, Maryland.
Speaking of shows, you got one tonight at the DC Improv.
Kicking it off. 7:30 tonight, my pal Rory Scovel. John Conroy, by the way, who is hysterical. He is opening the show.
I don't know him.
And then me. You may or may not have seen him. He is, A, really, really funny. He lived in Minneapolis for a while, a traveling comic. He should probably be featuring, but whatever. I am. So he's awesome. He's opening, then me, and then Rory is headlining. Shows tonight, DCImprov.com. We're there all weekend.
Very cool. John Wall's been upgraded to questionable for tonight's game. A good sign for the Wizards via Candace Buckner, who covers the team on the Post. Wall could play tonight. He's traveling with the team for the one-game road trip in Detroit, taking part in this morning's shoot-around, Scott Brooks said, and I guess they'll make a decision closer to the game. Wouldn't say for certain what they're thinking or leaning toward yesterday. John Wall has not played since January 25th. 8-week rehab from left knee surgery appears to be coming to a close. Brooks said he's getting close. The next thing is game action. I know everybody's excited. He's definitely exciting. He wants to get out there. He knows he has to continue to put the work in, and we will make the final decision. The Wizards need John Wall. I'm glad we put to bed the silly are they better without him conversation.
So glad that's over.
They're clearly not. But if you look at the standings right now, it's precarious for the Wizards because they could still be looking down the chamber at a first-round matchup with LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Matter of fact, right now, this moment, that is who they would play as a 6 seed, Cleveland the 3 seed. The Wizards are a game and a half ahead of the Miami Heat for the 6th spot. They're also 2.5 games back of Indiana. So there's enough cushion now that it's starting to look like they could finish smack dab in that 6 seed.
Yeah, they're in the 6th spot. That's what I said the other day when we talked about this and their playoff chances. To me, the key, honestly, is who do you want? And what's important? What's the most important thing?
Here's what it looks like now. Philly or Cleveland? Would you rather Philly catch Cleveland their half game back or play the Cavs?
Yeah. I'd probably rather play Philly, even though they give the Wizards fits. They're going to give a lot of teams fits, but they haven't done it yet. So
that
maybe
would be such a fun series.
I have no interest in seeing LeBron James end the Wizards season again. He's going to do it at some point. I just don't want to see it that early. Here's the thing. For me, this is one of those, I care a little bit less about the seeding than I do how do we get John Wall close to max John Wall? It's unfair to ask basically over a week and a half for him to, hey, by the way, get back to the point where you're the best player on the floor. That's hard coming off of knee surgery, inactivity, et cetera. He's going to have to, I think, fit in at least a little bit initially, probably on a minutes restriction. The most important thing for this team, though, is that you get him rolling over the next couple of weeks. I'm glad they've been cautious. I'm glad they've had a common sense approach to this thing. It's really allowed Satoransky to blossom a little bit. He needs to go back to being what he is, probably the first guy off the bench, him or Oubre, running things in the backcourt. I'm fine with that. Ultimately, I think they've got a couple tricks up their sleeve come postseason time where they'll play a little bit smaller. They'll have Markieff Morris at the 5.
They're
more
always
often
better in the playoffs than the regular year. They are in some ways the anti-Nationals and the anti-Capitals in that they are always able to find a gear to play a little bit better. Remember when they swept the Raptors a few years ago and like Otto Porter
I did not see that coming.
Came to life? Even last year when they went back and forth with Boston and just about messed around and made the conference finals, John Wall's jumping up on the scorers table. They always have a great first series and a really competitive playoff run. Atlanta, they dismantled it last season like everyone kind of expected and thought that they would. I don't know how or why, but they're built pretty well come playoff time. And they do some things different than the regular year in terms of going smaller. And it seems like Markieff Morris is more engaged. Everyone gets a little bit better. Brad Beal plays his best that time of year for whatever reason.
When every possession becomes magnified, what Beal does, especially in the half court, becomes that much more tantamount. I'm with you. They have a couple tricks up their sleeve that they've shown a few times. They've got this hyper-efficient lineup that includes both Kelly Oubre and Otto Porter, and maybe even Markieff Morris. They've got a couple things that they can do that are going to be tougher teams to deal with. Is it enough of a trick to beat Boston or Cleveland? I don't know. I would say probably not.
Real Guy Low Run on Twitter asked, was he the only one that chuckled with how I pronounced Chihuahua? Am I saying it weird?
That time you didn't. The first time you said Chihuahua where you kind of over-pronunciated parts of it. Like, it, you know what I mean? It was
I did.
Yeah.
How do you say that dog?
A Chihuahua.
Chihuahua.
Yeah. That right there, those last couple times you were very standard.
And I did something different the other
time? Yeah, the first time it was a little bit more. Like my wife says adult instead of adult.
Oh, that annoys me.
It's very annoying.
I like your wife. She's a lovely lady. That one gets to me.
As it should. She also eats her corn on the cob incorrectly, by the way. It's infuriating.
Well, she does what I do, I think. I go vertical, not horizontal.
Yeah, which is outrageous. You should be separated from the population.
You're a typewriter guy?
Of course you are. Everyone's a typewriter guy.
Nope. No, vertical
human
guy.
Beings are not made to be wood chippers.
Oh, you know
Rodents
what?
Do that.
Maybe I am a horizontal guy.
Of course
you
are.
Think about this.
Corner of the cob in front of you.
It's been so long.
Yeah, horizontal.
I think I'm horizontal.
Everyone's horizontal, except for the occasional genetically incorrect, weirdly programmed, awkward person that does it like a, again, like a raccoon would.
You know who eats corn on the cob not only correctly, but very fast?
Who's that?
Dave Jagler. Loves corn on the cob.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
I don't know. I just wanted to transition into
the
fact
did, yeah.
that Jags will join us next, one day ahead of Nats opening day, to talk baseball with us. Everybody else opens today, the Nats tomorrow. You're listening to The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.